You are now tuned into CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. Want to know more about the channel? Find us online at cjsf.ca.
Welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
Let's start off with Wereganey's show, and let's start off with the sort of ongoing health concern that is facing not just us in
also
Canada.
Me.
Also what?
Because I'm dying of the lurgy.
I still have the dreaded lurgy.
Yeah,
it is. You have not recovered. I thought it
if anyone in Radioland can hear the nasality of my voice, that's me suffering.
So the big news is coming out of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Just to give you a little bit of context, we're going to be talking about Mpox, formerly known as monkeypox, Mpox. It is a transmittable disease. Now, in 2023, there were, for the whole of 2023, there were 14,000 suspected cases in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, resulting in 650 deaths. Already this year, there are about 20,000 suspected cases and already over 650 deaths.
That's alarming, because death is supposed to be a rare but not impossible outcome.
Well, that's quite alarming. Democratic Republic of the Congo, 650 out of 20,000 have died so far. Okay. It's pretty shocking stuff. Yeah.
It's a low number, but it's not zero and therefore tragic, because ideally zero people would die.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's about 3 or 4% mortality rate, which is not great.
Yeah.
Because that's a lot of people. But it has been popping up everywhere. We noticed last week we talked about how Sweden had noticed not just Sweden, but science as a community have noticed that there are two strains of the Mpox. There's a clade 1 and clade 2, and there's an A and a B on a clade 2, I think. And it's this one particular strain that is quite deadly. Now, that strain is the one that's prominent in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. There's 20,000 odd cases there. As far as Public Health Canada indicated, there is no cases so far of that strain here in Canada at time of reporting, to the best of our knowledge. However, cases have been spotted in the prison systems in the US. Mm-hmm. Cases have been spotted outside the Democratic Republic. I think I mentioned Sweden spotted a case earlier. It isn't as widespread and outrageous as we were a little bit worried about, but Public Health Canada is imploring. I don't know if they would define themselves as imploring, but they are imploring Canadians, specifically those who are most likely to come across this particular disease, to go out and get not just one, but both doses of the vaccine.
Okay. I didn't know this was the kind of vaccine that needed a booster. I just learned something.
Yeah. Well, according to Ontario, only about 36% of the people who got the vaccine got the booster.
Oh, okay.
So it's a pretty shocking low case. As of August 24th, we haven't really been able to find any more updated information. There were about 166 cases of the less deadly variant of the Mpox in Ontario, and we're keeping an eye on it as it goes. If you feel that this is something that where you might be at risk, we mentioned earlier that this disease is spreading quite More so in the gay community. Mm-hmm. So if you are out interacting with gay men and there's body fluids, mm-hmm. just go and get not one, but both mm-hmm. of the booster shots. Make yourself more protected and cut it down. I mean, we are obviously concerned. We helped ring the alarm bells about this last year. But I want to make sure that we are recognizing the success that we saw. It did start spreading in New York, San Francisco, and I think there were cases spotted in Toronto as well. But mm-hmm. the gay community sort of en masse went and got vaccinated. Like there was enough herd immunity in Canada that it didn't really spread. It wasn't thousands of cases. It was a couple of hundred. You know what I mean? So I think that this massive proactive response helped cut this disease off at the knees the first time round. Mm-hmm. And now that there's an even more deadly variant out there, we really hope that the gay community in Canada can repeat that amazing success and go get vaccinated and go from there. I know, according, if my grinder is any indication, everybody is double Mpox vaxxed. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'll see it when I believe it. All right. Moving on. Mpox, obviously, very deadly. A lot of people are looking at how to address it. The Americans have dropped another 55 million to try and get more vaccines across the states. Doing everything they can. Public Health Canada taking it very seriously. Mm-hmm. Play safe, be safe, so on and so forth. All right, Sebastian, what was some of the big gay news that you saw this past week?
Ooh, I mean, unfortunately, the internet was drowning because there was a movie that came out with Daniel Craig called Queer. So it was very difficult to dig through all the stories and find something other than news about Daniel Craig. But I did find just sort of going back to the talking point that we've been having since July, that Pride in Canada is not just confined to Pride Month. Basically, just North Bay Pride is coming up in next weekend. So if you're in the North Bay area, make sure that you know what events are happening.
Well, we had mentioned earlier that we were tracking a story of a Kenyan man who had claimed asylum in Canada and repeatedly been rejected. Mm-hmm. This Kenyan man, Charles Mulangi, he is married to a woman mm-hmm. and has two children. He's a bisexual man. Bisexual people do exist, as I'm mm-hmm. sure we all know. But the refugee claim adjudicator essentially said he was not a credible bisexual man. He had a man that he was dating in Toronto write an affidavit. Anyway, he filed interventions and applications everywhere. Anyone who would listen to this man to save him from being deported back to Kenya, mm-hmm. he spoke to, including the United Nations Human Rights Committee. He's been backed up by the Migrant Workers Alliance for Change in Canada. Anyway, it seems like he has now been granted a one-year temporary residency in Canada. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if he can continue to effectively make the case and really persuade Customs and Immigration. It is tricky because Canada does offer, I believe, asylum and refugee status based on credible persecution for gender identity and sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. And being gay in Kenya is, you know, in some circles can be a death sentence. So it's certainly not not a safe place to be, for sure. But yeah, I wanted to bring it up because we'd mentioned this story in passing a few times before. He's been given a one-year temporary residence. But this issue has come up many times over the years of the radio show, Sebastian. How do you prove that you're, first of all, that you're gay, mm-hmm. but also so gay that you are in risk of your life if you were to return to the country of your birth?
Well, yeah, there is an issue with that, but there's also the issue of perceived as gay, because this is another another problem that's been sort of plaguing the system for a while, where you have people who are heterosexual, but they're accused of being gay back home, or they're sort of gender nonconforming by some means or another. And there are plenty of straight men who do not classically act like straight men, plenty of straight women who are a little bit tomboyish. It's fine. It's all groovy. But if you're in the kind of country where you could be persecuted, if you are, you know, a heterosexual tomboy, you are, in the eyes of the law, as good as gay. And I mean, really, basically, all I'm doing is I'm taking your question and making it even more difficult to answer. But I think that's one of the issues, that a lot of these sort of human rights commissions, refugee status boards, a lot of these, or even asking for asylum, a lot of these reviewers have to balance some of these more difficult questions about where do we cut the line. And part of it is definitely, like, if you can demonstrate that you've been persecuted back home, that you've had your assets seized, you've been arrested, you have some kind of criminal record for being gay, that definitely contributes. But I mean, the ideal is to get away before you start accumulating evidence like that. And I don't know, there's no good answer. It's really just a matter of picking trade-offs and trying to come up with what we collectively agree on as being the least bad answer. I have no idea how to organize the system to make sure that's happening, but I can definitely consider all the complications that would be in play, because you would definitely want to give somebody refugee status before they can give any kind of evidence, like seized assets or like prison time.
Well, the Pew Research Center did a survey in 2023, and they found that over 90% of Kenyans oppose same-sex marriage. Like, it is a deeply, deeply socially conservative country. Mm-hmm. It has, I believe, plenty of laws in place. There are no protections in place. And Global Affairs Canada really says to us LGBTQI persons should carefully consider the risks of traveling to Kenya. They say even though there are very few convictions, to us LGBTQI persons are routinely harassed by the police, face discrimination in the area, and Kenyan law prohibits sexual acts between individuals of the same sex and have lengthy prison sentences. Kenya is also exploring laws similar to Uganda that could, where they have, of course, the super gay, not super gay, was it aggravated homosexual laws, which face the death penalty. Which is outrageous, but Kenya not a pleasant place to be if you're a gay, a gay man or a queer woman, for sure. But yes,
it's kind of awkward, because you could say, you know, with Uganda right next door, it's not the worst place to be gay, but it's also like saying, I don't know, standing on hot coals is not the worst place you could be. Like, there are worse places, but do you really want to stand on hot coals? I don't know.
Not ideal.
No. Yeah. There has been a trend for a while of South Africa and Botswana taking in a lot of refugees from the area as well. It's much less travel. They're more likely to get accepted. And both of them are outside the Swahili regions of Africa, but they do take in a lot of Swahili speaking refugees. So they have a history with it. But if you can get beyond that, if you can move beyond that, or if you have people pursuing you actively, then yeah, getting off the continent might be, unfortunately, the way to go.
Well, we've been monitoring a lot of news coming out of Africa and, well, the whole world. You know, like, for example, there was a news story that came out at LGBTQ Nation talking about two men in Zimbabwe. Now, they accidentally, sort of inadvertently, revealed to cops that they are a gay couple. They are now facing 14 years in jail each. The two men, 28 and 25, just appeared before the court. But yeah, homosexuality is illegal in Zimbabwe. It's faced up to 14 years in jail plus various fines. They've been together for about a year, apparently, and somebody accused the other one of infidelity. The argument escalated. Cops were involved. They were sharing a home. And they told the cops, hey, he cheated on me. Which, of course, outs you as being both gay and in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them were promptly arrested. So, yeah, not great. But we see similar such horror stories coming out of Africa and mm-hmm. various other countries all the time. We don't share a lot of them here, but we certainly monitor them. We are jumping now to our first track of the day. This is going to be a song by Alana Matty. This is Everything's Fine. And we'll be back just after this.
Had a panic attack at the dentist. 32 in my very first one. Turns out everything is scary when stability's fled from your house. They all ask me how I'm feeling, but the truth, I don't know, so I guess that I'm fine. My lungs are still breathing. Cracks, the foundations are starting to show. I'm singing for the fly.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Zick Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
Sebastian, what is particularly gay about Detroit?
House music. It was invented there by Frankie Knuckles.
That is a fantastic answer. That is.
That's not the answer you were looking for.
Not the answer I was looking for. No.
Did you predict that I might have an answer locked and loaded?
You know, it's one of those things. All right. So the
Detroit house scene is still, even though Detroit kind of has a reputation of being like RoboCop came true, and the city kind of fell apart. The house scene there was very influential, and it's kind of moved to Chicago, but there are still elements of the original Detroit house scene that are still around. So yeah, it was just a little, you know, the intersection between black and gay in the area, and then that's where you get a lot of modern music from. So yeah, but that's not the answer you're looking for. You're looking for something else.
Yeah, no, that's not remotely the answer I was looking for. The answer I'm looking for is more about, specifically, if you were referring to a plan uh-huh. by the Detroit Regional LGBT Chamber of Commerce,
mm-hmm.
Including the City of Detroit and research firm Community Marketing and Insights, then that would have been the answer I was looking for. Because what's particularly gay about Detroit is a brand new planned uh-huh. LGBT business district.
So a business district. So we're not talking about like bars and clubs. We're not talking about like a village. We're talking about like a place where you can go to like get a realtor or like a grocery store or something? Like, what are we talking about here?
Well, they haven't built it yet, but what I think is really interesting and why I wanted your take on this, which is why I haven't told you about it in advance, is Detroit is surveying the people of Detroit, specifically the gay people, and they are saying, like, look, we're looking at purchasing a parcel of land, picking up some properties, and sort of airdropping in an LGBT business district. Creating and curating a village from scratch somewhere in the city of Detroit.
Okay.
I don't know, like, in historically, gay villages have emerged mainly just from the sort of gravitational pull of a gay bar or some other...
Well, I mean, it's also a form of ghettoization. It usually happens in downtrodden, inexpensive parts of town. And there's usually every town has like some multiple actually inexpensive areas, sometimes near ports, near industrialization, near train yards, the edge of town, an old downtown core that the police don't take care of properly. It'll just be some area with low property value and cheap rent. And if you have multiple parts of town like that, then what'll happen is, you know, various groups that are struggling economically will sort of sort themselves to the different parts of town. And that's often how it happens. Or actually quite often, if you look at the actual history of a lot of the major villages in North America, at least, you'll have some part of town that thrives and then it'll hit a depression or a slump and it'll become run down. And that's when the gays move in. So that's what happened at Queen and Wellesley. That was a very well-to-do area in like the 1930s. And then Toronto kind of hit a slump. And then you had this area that was conveniently downtown, near all the transit, near all the jobs, but was very low rent. And then a lot of the gays just sort of ended up there. They started their own small businesses down the street, blah, blah, blah. Bob's your uncle. 20 years later, you got yourself a village. So the idea of just sort of artificially dropping one in, I mean, easily what you could just do is get, you know, a mostly empty apartment building near the kind of building that could be retrofitted into a services center near a street where, you know, there are empty storefronts. And then you could just say, okay, you know, all the barbers and bars and, I don't know, grocers and whatnot can go there, and then people can live here, and then we can provide services here. You know, you do 60% of it, and then people sort of move there on their own and fill in the rest. That would be a plan that would make sense.
Well, the Chamber of Commerce in Detroit is they're doing a big survey. About 1,000 people already answered the survey. They are then going to work with what do they call them?
Stakeholders?
No, site selection people, consultants that specialize in that. I forget the name of the market analysis company. They're going to partner up with one of them, find specific sites in Detroit, but really they want to get an idea of where in Detroit. So it's a big city, you know, where would they put one in? You know, for example, I don't know if the Toronto gays of today would choose Church and Wellesley, you know what I mean? Like, or would they choose probably somewhere closer to the beaches, I would imagine, like somewhere, you know, a bit of a different location. But as you clearly outlined, the gay village historically, from, you know, Toronto, London, Montreal, Ottawa, Vancouver, have all organically grown out of a coincidental congregation of queer folks. It's a really interesting question as to whether or not Detroit is able to construct queer culture in a specific place. Now, a part of the survey, I was looking through it. I would not, if you're in Detroit, do the survey. If you're not in Detroit, there's like 100 questions. It's a lot of questions. But they were asking about, you know, where in the city do you feel the most comfortable? What areas do you think is the sort of queerest and friendliest and so on and so forth? They're really definitely trying to get the best idea. But do you think an artificially constructed queer business district. They reckon it could take at least 10 years from site selection to things happening. You know, do you think that could work?
I think it could work, but I think it would rely more on choosing a site based on available infrastructure and affordability than it would on whether or not you feel comfortable. Because the thing is, it doesn't matter what part of town feels comfortable now, because what you're doing is building a spot. You can get a spot that doesn't make people feel comfortable and make it feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So you just need somewhere that's, I don't think they have a subway, but I do believe they do have mass transit of some kind, like a light rail system of some kind. I seem to recall they have something. So something near mass transit so that people can come in, even if they don't live in the area, they can get there easily. Somewhere that has buildings that can be converted into storefronts, somewhere that's not too far from residences. Like, you got to pick a part of town like that. And as for whether or not it could be made, you got to bear in mind, you know, a gay bar is not a community center. It's a small business. You know, somebody took their money and took a risk and they opened a bar and they did the marketing. They targeted the gay community. They tried to exclusively get or especially get their income from gay men, blah, 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 blah. It is a small business. So if this is going to be done through a series of small business loans and allowing sort of market dynamics sort of select the good bars from the bad bars, absolutely. You know, they're going to be motivated to try to cater to the local community as well as possible. Whereas if you just keep throwing money at something, hoping that it'll work, and if it doesn't work, just throw more money at it. I don't know. You just end up with like phase four of Marvel. Like it doesn't always work out, you know, you got to do it smartly. And I think if you're getting business folks together, sometimes you get bad leadership and they just make weird ding dong decisions. But generally speaking, when you got money on the line, people are a little bit more careful. So I could imagine this could work out so long as they're more focused on infrastructure and affordability and then building up a community around that instead of asking where's the community already and investing there. Which, I mean, if you've already got 3/4 of the community built, then yeah, by all means, go for it. But if you don't already have three quarters of a community built and you have to start from scratch in a neighborhood that has good bones to it.
Well, the it's worth noting, you know, this is the LGBT Chamber of Commerce. It's the body that represents all the gay businesses in Detroit, in theory. Their hope is that if they can pick an area, find the parcels of land, properties, etc., and concentrate queer businesses in that area. Mm-hmm. Theoretically speaking, that area would be very pro-gay, being it's full of the gay things.
Mm-hmm.
And as a gay person, you'd be like, oh, I feel safe and comfortable marauding around and patronizing these businesses in this new gay area. Mm-hmm. And that should generate more foot traffic, more potential tourism. They just think that if they can say this is a safe, fun, interactive gay spot, that the homosexuals with money will come and spend their money there. Can they make a gay village from scratch, a gay business area from scratch? Who knows?
They're
planning on big capital raising projects. They're planning on buying properties. They're taking it seriously and looking at a pretty long window of time to do it in. So I don't know. It's a strong maybe for me. And
you know, actually, one of the biggest killers of gay districts, villages and neighborhoods in North America is, and I wish it were more complicated than this, but I've seen this multiple times.
Is it the digitization of the economy?
No.
I mean, I think it is, but that's...
Well, partly, I guess, yeah. Noise ordinances.
Mm.
When a gay village gets slapped excessively with noise ordinances and they're told to keep quiet. And the irony is that you can live close to a dance club and not hear anything.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to insulate the building properly. And yeah, that can be a cost, but there, like, that's one of the things that killed the village in Toronto, was that a lot of people who moved to the village to be near the village then complained that the village was noisy.
Yeah.
And then they had, everybody had to turn the noise down. And then little by little, it just sort of shut down. Definitely happened in Toronto. I've heard Montreal struggling with this. But Montreal has that sort of French aspect of like, we don't care. And they just sort of go about the, like, we're going to eat a sandwich and watch you be angry at us. Ha ha ha. Like that's the very French attitude, which in cases